Hey ADHD mums, I've got something that might save you from that 2 a.m. Google rabbit hole where ADHD somehow leads you to diagnosing yourself with 14 unrelated conditions and then you freak out at 2 a.m. This takes all the guesswork out of it. It is called the ADHD Pre-Diagnosis Workbook, a guide for women and mothers. Think of this as your ADHD assessment survival kit. Part cheat sheet, part pep talk, and completely designed to help you from second guessing whether it's ADHD or just mum life. Here's what's inside. Prompts to help you organize your thoughts, because let's be real, those shower epiphanies, they are gone by the time you tail off. Tips for talking to psychiatrists, because nothing screams classic ADHD like knowing that you've researched the condition to death, but still feeling the urge to act surprised when they diagnose you. And let's face it, there's always that moment of, do I sound too confident? Do they think I'm just getting meds? Should I sound like I don't know? Should I sound like I do know? What if they don't even diagnose me at the end of this? This workbook is everything I wish I'd known before my diagnosis. It creates templates. All you've got to do is just plug it in. So you're not walking in late to your appointment, babbling about a year's worth of random thoughts that somehow never make it to paper. Grab your copy now at adhdmums.com.au. And all of the links will be in the show notes. So let's go into today's episode, because if you're anything like me, you've already started multitasking and you probably don't even remember what this episode is called. Hello and welcome to the next episode of ADHD Mums. Today's episode is on the unspoken gendered mental load in partnerships and why it feels impossible to make change. I post about this, a lot of people do, but yet it feels like to me nothing really changes. We bring light to it, we talk about it, but yet it's still there. In this episode, I'm going to talk about dad and mum in terms of stereotypical heterosexual relationship for ease of talking on this episode, because it would make the episode really difficult and long-winded if I talked about every single different type of relationship. But you can interchange dad and mum to mum and mum, or however your relationship looks. When I'm saying dad and mum, I'm talking more about stereotypical. The dad's working, the mum's working part-time or full-time, and she has more of a load. I'm absolutely aware that there is more than one way to have a family, and there should be. Now, I want to say up front, and please have a bit of a giggle with me, in that I have got quite significant PMDD. I've sat down to record, and I don't think the mental load and what we can do about it is probably a great topic for an autistic and ADHD PMS lady. But of course, that's the one I want to do because I'm in rage. So excuse me if I get a little emotional, but I started to think, well, you know what? It's not okay. So maybe we do need to be emotional about it. Maybe we do need to stop putting pressure on ourselves. And maybe a PMS autistic woman is exactly the person that needs to be here to start to address these issues. So let's jump in. If you're an autistic or an ADHD mum, the chances are that you already know that expectations are not evenly distributed in relationships. This is not just your relationship. This is society. This is the way it seems to be. So from the late 1960s, across that 10-year period, by the end of the 1970s, it was the first time ever that more than half of women had jobs outside of the home. Now, they were paid 60% less than men. But they did work. It was often part-time, healthcare, service industries, but they were working for the first time and they so deeply fought for that. And full respect to the 1960s and 70s, where women started to really demand change. Schooling, employment, work, and we have been fighting that battle over that period of time. However, personally, I think we've had a bit of a lag in terms of, well, now we kind of expected to do it all, aren't we? Not only are we working and we're often in careers that are on par, if not above our partners, we might be earning more money than our partner. We might be a single mum and we have full-time employment to support ourselves. But what I do know is that women now have been left in an almost impossible situation. Social media, bank accounts, the amount of messages, WhatsApp, the sporting teams, the complications, the pace of life now has meant that women are really, really exhausted and mums are juggling the most amount of things I think we've ever juggled. If you're in a partnership where one or both partners are neurodivergent, I'm sure you felt this even more acutely. There is a silent but undeniable gendered imbalance in how routines, flexibility, and emotional labor play out in neurodivergent relationships, or even probably all relationships. One of the reasons that I'm doing this episode is because I've been writing a self-diagnosis book for autistic women for about 6 months, and it's just in its final draft version. But what I noticed when I was writing this book, I was looking at all of the different ways that autistic women show up. And of course, we know that autistic people present differently. You've met one autistic person, you just met one autistic person. We all look different, which is why the book is so long. But I was looking at it, and when I was writing it, I kept thinking about practical strategies of ways to make things easier and better and reduce burnout for autistic mums. And one of the things that I was looking at, for example, was around routine and rituals, which is part of an autistic makeup. But it can also be really important for other neurodivergents, such as ADHD. Some ADHD people just really enjoy a routine. Sometimes there's a certain sequence of things that makes you feel good and you don't want it interrupted. If you're autistic, that makes it even more annoying to be interrupted. But when I was looking at this, I was actually looking at the interplay of relationships, and I started to think about an autistic dad. So let's look at, you've got a neurodivergent mum, and a lot of the women on this podcast are going to be neurodivergent. So what are we going to attract as a partnership? A neurodivergent partner, male or female? So if we have, let's say, for example, an autistic mum or an ADHD mum that really enjoys a cup of tea by herself in the morning, or a certain sequence of, I like to have a shower, I like to put on just a touch of makeup so I don't look, you know, 100 years old, or I just want to have time to be able to put my deodorant on and go to the toilet to do a number two by myself. Like, we might be talking about basic needs. So I just had this brainwave that if we just talk a male and female gender relationship for the moment, if you have an autistic dad or a partner and they need to have their morning routine uninterrupted, it can be seen by society as a necessity. However, if we talk typical gender roles for a moment, if you have an autistic mum or woman and she needs the same, she's expected to be flexible. She's expected to push through. She's expected to prioritize the chaos of the household over her own regulation. She has kids going to the toilet with her constantly. Yet you might have a partner that needs 30 minutes and their phone with them, and they just might wander off for 30 minutes uninterrupted every morning amongst chaos. And it's impossible for them to speed this process up. And I watched Maggie Dent speak a while ago, and she reckons that dads have been doing this even before phones existed, that they seem to take longer in the toilet. Or are they hiding? I don't know. But it's such a common thing that women talk about. Yet I have no expectation to be able to do that uninterrupted. I mean, I'm lucky to get 2 to 3 minutes. Or, you know, if you have your period, you may have spectators during that, and I'm trying to close the door, there's kids coming in, and there can be absolutely no privacy. I'm trying to have a shower, and, you know, I have got children commentating and trying to shower with me at the same time. But yet there's something in the partner not having their routine interrupted that's seen as okay, that's seen as, well, they should be able to do that because they need to go to work and that's important for them, even though the mum has to go to work as well. So this isn't just my perspective. The research on gendered expectation, cognitive load, and autistic masking confirms what many of us experience every day. If you're wondering if it's just you, it is not. Today I'm going to have a look at the way that society is biased, the cognitive science behind it, or the why sometimes we post on Instagram, we share some memes, but yet it feels like nothing's really changing. Or maybe that's just my take on it. Maybe you think things are changing. And if they are, that's awesome. I'd love you to send me an email or share in the Facebook group about what you think has changed and what helps. So absolutely share that information. The first thing I want to talk about is gendered load of routine and responsibility. I want to have a look at the why. This episode is not a beginner's episode on mental load. I am not going to talk about remembering the lunches and who's got to cook dinner at night. There's so much more to it than that, particularly in regards to neurodivergence and how that plays out specifically for us. So for example, if we strip away the labels and we have a look at the structure of many neurodivergent relationships, we will often see a pattern. if we talk about a heterosexual relationship, we have an autistic dad that is often protected in their need for structured routines. We may have an autistic mum that is expected to absorb the unpredictability of parenting while also maintaining a level of cognitive flexibility that is completely beyond her neurotype. And this can play out as well for ADHDs or any type of neurodivergence, trauma, depression, anxiety. We see the dads are often protected with some of the things that they need, but the mums are expected to just take whatever happens and just be flexible for whatever happens around her. And this is where we talk about the default parent, where that is the parent who is male or female, picking the kid up from school sick, staying home with the kid who is sick, cancelling their own plans, taking one for the team wherever's needed, dropping off the school box that was late, the default parent on the speed dial, they're the emergency contact, they're the person that waits with the child when they're in hospital overnight. That's kind of more around that default parent and being flexible. And then at the end of being flexible for your children or your partner or however your life looks like, if there's a skerrick of time left, you may then get a minute for yourself. But that is not a minute necessarily to meditate or read a book or do something that you love. That might be a minute to do a wee. That's how it feels. And that's how it feels when women talk about the break that they get when they get to go to work. Now, I have cold shudders when I think about if I talk to my 25-year-old self now and said, oh yeah, because you get to go to work, I'd be like, what? Going to work is the job. I want to go to do the other part. Work is now the holiday. And that is fucked up, to be honest. That's disturbing. The fact that the break for the mother is now work. And if that's your reality, you are not the only one. There is this expectation on female flexibility that is so deeply rooted into our social gender roles. There is so much research around the gender division, and I can put that in the show notes, that show women who are neurodivergent or neurotypical, we are just conditioned to be the default problem solver and caregiver, while the men's routines and needs are kind of like accommodated in that, almost like a child's, that we have to accommodate their needs as we do with our children who rely on us for food, drink, and shelter, whilst a fully functioning adult man, we have to then accommodate them into our needs, which I suppose really brings me back to if you were the stay-at-home mum and then you're accommodating the partner because, you know, they're the breadwinner. But even then, you know, having dinner on the table when he arrives home or she arrives home, you know, that's easier said than done with kids who are particularly neurodivergent. But on top of that, you could also be working. You could be working the same hours or more. Imagine if we flipped around the gender roles. Like, you know, the way that we praise men that do anything or the partners that do anything, like, what do you mean they cook and then they've been to work? They cook and work? Wow. What do you mean they have the kids so you can go to the gym? Wow, what a great person. Wow, what do you mean that they let you have a mother's night or a day out? Wow. And you got a massage and he had the kids? Wow. But it's just an expected thing for women. It's just that men would have a night out, that you would work all day, cook dinner, make lunches. There's no accolades there. It's just an expectation. And often it's not celebrated. It's more you just feel chipped if you get something wrong. Like, let's say you put the wrong lunchbox in the wrong bag. Oh, you got that wrong. It's not, oh, you worked 18 hours that day. It's, well, you got that part wrong, mum. And then there's the shame around it, which is just, it's crazy if you think about it. There was a study as well in 1989, I'm happy to put that in the show notes, which is called The Second Shift. And a lot of us know about that, where it found that even in a relationship where both the men and the woman worked full time, the women still handle the majority of the household and the childcare duties. We can see that the imbalance becomes even more clear because it's often that autistic and ADHD mums mask their own needs to prioritize others. So our neurotype is not very good for doing these jobs. A lot of this washing, ironing, cooking, school backpacking, these are boring, mundane tasks that we have to endure for our children. We don't necessarily enjoy them. There's no dopamine. It's this self-sacrificing mentality where we do it for our children. And we are doing it for our children. And I hope that we will be bringing up a great generation because I know that that the women on this podcast, we are giving so much of ourselves to our children and we're doing it for them. So if you have children who have been diagnosed autistic or ADHD, or you've been diagnosed either of those things yourself, or any type of neurodivergence, you might start to notice that the people around you start to get diagnosed, or you might notice that some of the things that you're working on with your children, your partner might do, you might do, and you start to notice a little bit more how some of these things are playing out. Now, rigidity can be a big one, and we know that that's probably more associated with the autistic neurotype. However, rigidity can play up in different personality types, different ways that partners were brought up or you were brought up. There's so much to rigidity, but there can be some real rigidness in autistic people. And for those people who have autistic partners, you might notice that it's more socially permitted to maintain their structure because their challenges with executive function and sensory overwhelm are acknowledged. They might find things really difficult. They may only be able to do one thing at a time. They may not be able to achieve certain tasks. So they say, look, I'm just sorry. I just can't do that. I can't coordinate that. I can't be interrupted in the morning. I'm overloaded. I can't do that. But yet autistic mums, ADHD mums, we're expected to just deal with it. Do better. Be better. Try harder. Those are the messages that are given to us. Yet for our partners, that often is seen as something else that we need to accommodate. And if we attempt to do the same thing and put our needs, even just at the level that we put our partners and our children's, we can be perceived as inflexible, selfish, or even unfit to be a parent. What that means is that we then have more of a masking burden. And one way that I really like to look at masking is that we're talking about a gap. If we're talking about your personality that you have, masking is the gap. So some people mask, like let's say 10, 20%. They are themselves, but there's things that they do that they wouldn't normally do. There's a front that they put up and it's 10 to 20% different possibly to their genuine, authentic personality. Now, other people have a mask that's much further from their personality. They may be masking 50, 80% and they might have to mask a lot longer. So when we look at burnout, autistic shutdowns, ADHD meltdowns, whatever we're looking at, we have to look at the gap of the mask and how big the mask is, how much far away it is from your natural personality, and also how often you do it. Those are the two things that contribute to burnout around masking. But we have to mask and suppress discomfort to ensure that the household runs smoothly. So if you have to mask your overload, your frustration, maybe rage, the fact that you're sick of being flexible, you're sick of being the default, someone's sick again, now there's hand lice, you've got to wash everything. It's coming down to me. What's for dinner? By masking that, all of that at home, you really are moving towards burnout much faster than someone else who isn't masking those things or has less pressure and demands. This is why we talk so much about burnout in mothers, I believe. Now, this misinterpretation of needs in women can be one of the reasons that so many autistic or ADHD mums can be misdiagnosed with anxiety, borderline personality, depression, because their underlying autistic traits are unacknowledged, because they are so used to masking in every single sense of the word. Their autistic traits are like, they don't even know that they exist anymore. For example, one of the things with autism assessments is around flexibility, being interrupted, routines. And a lot of the time, women who are just conditioned to be flexible, they do not look autistic in terms of they are like flexible, they can deal with it, you're nice about everything, but they mask the people-pleasing anger inside where you're like, I'm actually sick of this. I'm smiling and saying this is okay, but it's actually not. And this is one of the things I think that leads to the misdiagnosis of women, particularly autistic women, because they're so used to masking and suppressing their own discomfort. If they have a house of autistic kids and an autistic partner, who is the flexible one here? If no one can be interrupted and everyone's rigid, who is always forced to be flexible then? Otherwise, there would be chaos. There would be huge meltdowns. And I haven't seen, correct me if I'm wrong, that many partnerships where they share that evenly. The default parent can also mean that you are the default parent emotionally, where you are helping emotionally regulate everyone in the house. So let's have a look at this in everyday life. Let's break it down to some real life examples. Let's say, for example, the morning routine. Let's say the autistic dad wakes up, he follows his strict routine. He drinks his coffee in peace, he completes his task in the same order. Any disruption is frustrating, and it's so widely accepted in this family that he needs his structured time before engaging with the family that nobody even asked him for anything. Meanwhile, the neurodivergent mother, who could be autistic or could have ADHD, is dealing with a child waking up too early, a child waking overnight, a school note that suddenly needs signing, meltdown over the wrong breakfast cereal. She's forward planning the fact that she doesn't have the right flavor of Pop-Tart. She's got a missing sock that she's trying to find. There's shoes in one car, there's a lost hat in the other. She's playing catch up. And this is where sometimes people talk about that married single mum, where they're married, but they're almost operating single because there isn't that other person to ask. The kids are going to them because it's so accepted in that family that dad can't be interrupted. He's not going to help, so they don't ask. But her need for structure is just as neurological necessary as his. But yet she's expected to just absorb every unexpected change without having a meltdown herself. But inside, she could be raging, but you wouldn't necessarily know it. So, of course, this needs to change. Firstly, we need to look at equal recognition of needs. If one partner can take 20 minutes to self-regulate in the morning, and that might be doing a poo by himself, the other might need 20 minutes to do their makeup. They might like to go to the toilet for 20 minutes. They might need to shower for 20 minutes by themselves. And I don't think a mum's need for predictability should be shamed or guilted. It should be just as accepted that she has that. And I know that I'm using that should word, and I know that we know that, but how do we get it to change? And we will go into that into the next episode in terms of those practical solutions. But we know that the reason that the dad, if it's a dad, or the partner can sit with their structured morning is because the other partner is absorbing the unpredictable nature of children. But this isn't malicious. We're not talking about a group of horrible partners here. We're talking about just a privilege that just goes unnoticed and just a stacking on top of women that is just seemed to be a given. So if one partner struggles with unexpected change and so does the other, one of them gets space to self-regulate and one of them doesn't. And for example, you may have the mum go, this child's sick now, I have an important meeting. And the other partner might go, well, I can't change my day, I don't have enough notice. But yet, kids are unpredictable. So who absorbs that load and stress? Because the default parent often does that. So when I talk about the imbalance and the gendered load, I really believe it's a direct contributor to the autistic burnout or ADHD burnout or just general burnout and maternal exhaustion that just happens this day and age to women. So if you feel like you really need structure, you're not being rigid, you're not being selfish, it's a basic necessary accommodation that you would fight for if this was your child. If this was a child that needed structure, transitions, if this was a friend, we would all jump there. But because it's the mum, there's like, oh, well, we can't accommodate that because that would impact someone else. I almost think it's like we don't even want to know because it seems like something we're never going to get. That's how I feel about it. It's like, why highlight something that you can't have? Why think about having a holiday to Canada and going on a beautiful cruise or whatever your dream is if you have absolutely no way of getting there? It's like, why even dream about it? That's what I feel like some of this stuff is for mental load for women. It's like, we might talk generally about it and share some memes, but if it feels like it's so far out and so unachievable, it's almost better not to even think about it. So there's that question around, why don't we say anything? Why do we leave it? We know that neurodivergent relationships have a higher rate of breaking up than neurotypical ones. And I can put that research into the show notes. We know that that's the case. And primarily that's because, well, there's lots of factors as to why that is. But firstly, one would be that there's more load on appointments. There's a higher level of parenting that needs to happen. You have to be a much more hands-on. There's less breaks. You often have a partner, usually the default parent who has to work part-time. There can be a financial sacrifice that happens with that, depending on what your children's needs are. And it can escalate in a picture that puts more pressure on that relationship. They have less time together and they can see that that relationship is more likely to break up than a neurotypical relationship. It's not okay that we take on the unspoken gendered load. And that's exactly the issue. And the fact that we don't speak up about it, but we advocate for our kids, and there's things that we could be doing for ourselves, is part of the problem. If that's you and this speaks to you, I'd love you to be able to listen to next week's episode where I'm going to go through why don't we ask for change, how we can start to tackle this in our relationship, and what are some things that we can do to start making those steps forward. I don't want my children to watch this occur, and I don't want my daughter to assume that this is her role. I want to make changes in my relationship and encourage others to do that so we can continue to grow for the generation that's watching us right now. And this is about improving our relationships and personal development across everybody in the family. Thank you so much for listening. This episode was about the gendered load of routine and responsibility in neurodivergent partnerships. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you would like to share how it's going for you in the Facebook group, I'd love to hear from you. I moderate it myself and I make sure that I read every single post there. So please post and share. Love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Instagram or head over and join our amazing ADHD Mums podcast Facebook community. Everything you do matters and helps to spread the word about what neurodiversity in females looks like.